Is that?
This Three Beards Media podcast may contain mature themes, and if you're not down with that, we got three words for you. Like the podcast. Nailed it!
Hey, good evening, everybody. This is False Starts, episode 15. I am your host, Chris Shipley, joined as always by Bill Blank. Bill, how are you tonight?
Good, man. How are you? I just noticed you were dressed like PJ Fleck in that TV interview in the intro.
I can superimpose your head on that body. And it would be a fat PJ Fleck. You know what that video is from? It's from when I got interviewed about Marty Terrell on Channel 13.
Stealing from your dad or whatever?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, he stole a bunch of money from dad. And so, did I tell you that I ran into him recently?
No.
So they were doing, it was actually a beer can alley, Teddy Holly's place downtown. Uh-huh. KXNO was hosting a watch party for the Drake game. And I went down there to hang out with Heather and Paul and some other people. And I'm sitting at the table and it was probably 3/4 into the game. And all of a sudden I turn around and at the table behind me is sitting Marty Terrell.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
this and is which at, game? When was this?
The Drake game when they were playing in the finale for the Missouri Valley Conference Championship.
Gotcha.
So I look at Heather and I go, is that who I think it is? And she goes, yeah. And I said, oh, I should go say hi. And Paul goes, no, you shouldn't. He said, he's like, which is the reason why we didn't tell you he was sitting there this entire time. I was like, okay, fine. I'll be nice. I won't tell.
Did he have an ankle bracelet on?
I don't know. I couldn't tell. I felt sorry for the two people that he was sitting with because I'm pretty sure he probably stole their wallet.
Yeah.
Or he was trying to bilk them out of some money. One of the two. I don't know.
But did he serve like all of his time? And
no,
like,
he got out early. You know, he got out early. Yeah.
How long was he supposed to go?
6 years. I'll tell you know what, out of that whole ordeal though, after I had that interview, mm-hmm. Ken Miller sent me a direct message on Twitter. I had never talked to Ken Miller in my life. And he sent me a direct message and asked me if I could call him.
Yeah.
So I called him and he very, very nice and was like, listen, I heard your story on the radio. I had no idea that had happened. Would you mind coming to the station? I would love to sit down and talk to you. And I went over there and we kind of had a long conversation about what he went through and how terrible he felt and how sick he was about finding out some of these stories and whatever. Uh-huh. And since then, you know, I've developed a really good friendship with him. That's come out of that, which is kind of nice. He lets me come on the show all the time and do stuff for charity and things like that, which is super cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in an instance where I kind of look back and think that guy got dragged through the mud because his name was he said, you know, matched. Unfortunately, you know, every time somebody said Marty, the next thing out of their mouth was Miller.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't believe that I didn't do anything, mm-hmm. but I didn't. And I said, no, I believe you, Ken, you know, and that guy probably did take a lot of hits, a lot of, you know, shrapnel.
Guilty by association.
Yeah, for sure. So
and crazy well, story. There's probably people out there that don't believe they didn't know, you know, be like,
yeah.
You know, be like, if one of your, you know, say your wife was dealing meth out of your house and you had no idea, then
right,
and then she gets busted and everybody be like, how did he not know?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But to Ken's point, he was like, listen, I came in, I, outside of us being on the radio, I never even hung out with him.
Right.
It's like, you know, I'd come in, we'd do our show. Show was over. I left, went to my other job. I had no idea what he was doing, you know, outside of that time that he was working for the station or whatever. It had nothing to do with me.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's weird when you find out that people in radio don't make that much money because you grow up thinking they're movie stars, basically.
Right. Yeah. Know?
And you find out they all have to have other jobs and stuff. And that's what happens in entertainment in general, because the people with the money at the top, they take advantage of the talent because they know how hungry the talent is.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a great job. People would do it for free. People do. Right. And that's what all this podcast shit is. But
right.
You know, it's a bunch of people paying a little bit to be on the radio, more or less.
Right. Yeah.
Especially now, you know, but so you find that out. And so, you know, I imagine that Marty Terrell was like, probably wasn't doing anything else. He was probably hustling for
all. Oh, yeah. You know, 100%. He
probably had a bunch of different hustles, you know?
And, you know, and it was the same hustle, because the stories that I heard in 2019 and 2018, when I gave that interview and so on, are pretty much the same scam that he ran on my dad. And he would prey on people that were so hungry to make something. Like, for example, my dad, I mean, he grew up poor. He grew up with not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. When he got this business and started making a little money, I mean, he had never had that before. And I don't think, to be honest with you, if I'm looking back, he knew how to handle success, right? Mm-hmm. And he just wanted more and more and more. And I think his greed got the better of his better judgment. I mean, and I think Marty recognized that and dangled things in front of him to take money from him. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that that's because my dad was smarter than that. I mean, my dad could spot a con a mile away, you know, mostly because he would sometimes run his own, I'm sure, when he was younger. You know, he was not dumb.
Yeah, but as the dollar amounts climb, the cons get a little bit more believable.
Right. Yeah.
Because then you start dealing with dollar amounts you didn't think you'd ever have dealt with before.
Right.
That there's people involved that those dollar amounts is pocket change to.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're punching above your weight class. So that kind of goes, because now you want to get to that next weight class.
Right. Yep.
In order to get there, you got to punch above your weight class for a minute, because that's how you got where you were.
Right.
So your dad punched above his weight class his entire life, just trying to punch up to the next one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I think what bothered me the most was after it, kind of what you said earlier. Well, how would they not know? I mean, there was so many stories about Marty early on. I remember my dad, whenever he'd be in the news for something like that or in the paper or when they wrote those articles in City View about him, I remember my dad getting so mad because he'd be like, this happened, you know, 7 years ago. Why would anybody want to do business with him after this story has been told before? I mean, Tom Witowski did an entire article in the Des Moines Register back there and interviewed dad and had dad on. Interviewed dad, interviewed the guy. I don't know if you remember the old Okoboji restaurants here in town. He had swindled that guy out of a bunch of money, and that guy was in the newspaper. Channel 13 had interviewed my dad after the Tyson Holyfield fight. They had interviewed dad and exposed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he still went through this town and did what he did. So I mean, to your point, when people start, when the money is so big, the con starts to be more and more believable.
Yeah. And it's just because you just can't imagine people pulling the same bullshit cons with these huge dollar amounts that you were pulling with small dollar amounts.
Right.
You know, it's just like, yeah, there ain't no way these people don't care this much about this amount of money.
Yeah. But
they don't realize, you know, they just don't realize. When that's pocket change to somebody else, the gamble ain't shit.
Yeah. Well, that's not That's certainly not where I thought we were going to go for the, the show. I don't even remember how we got on that. Oh, that video that I was.
Oh,
was
yeah. Like when you were dressed like PJ Fleck.
PJ Fleck. Listen, I'll have you know I wore a sweater vest today. So
did you with a tie? Yeah,
I didn't wear a tie. Didn't wear the tie this time.
Probably because of PJ Fleck.
I wear a sweater vest because I'm fat and they hang longer and it makes me not look so round. I look more slender with those sweater vests on that go a little longer. So
can't you just buy any shirt that's longer?
No, because I have a dress shirt on underneath of it. But if I wear that and tuck it in, then it looks, my stomach is just one big tucked in. But if I wear a sweater vest that goes a little bit past my waist, then it at least looks a little less.
Gotcha. Frumpy. So you have to tuck in your shirt, basically, if you're not wearing a sweater vest.
Yes, for where I'm going, for where I was going today. Yes.
Yeah. So you couldn't. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, needless to say, I looked nice. I did not look PJ Fleck nice though. That dude is straight up.
The real question is, did you run wherever you were going?
No. Do I look like I have ever?
That's why PJ. That's what drives me nuts about PJ Fleck. He's that guy. Did you ever know that guy ever in your life? There's like, I don't know, somebody's dad. There's always somebody's dad that was like this squirrely fucker that just ran everywhere.
No,
like there was not necessarily somebody's dad, but a guy.
I'm trying to think.
You don't remember growing. You don't remember there just being a guy around. Like almost everywhere, either at school, it's a different guy at each place. Somebody
it's typically a guy that is compensating for something. Like just like I we had a kid in school that he was really short.
Yeah.
So he always was constantly trying to act like he, you know, was something or so I'm with you.
Like they act like they're busy. Like it's a way to seem like they're super busy all the time.
Right.
Like those people that like you have somebody in your office that walks really fast everywhere, even though they're not fucking doing anything.
Yeah.
Like just to make it, oh no, gotta get to work all the time.
That reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld when George is always talking about how if I just look annoyed, I look like I'm busy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Seinfeld guy, but
shut up.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I prefer Curb. I think it's way better.
And I have not watched Curb yet.
It's 100 times better. The acting's better. The acting, first of all, is way better.
Yeah,
is part of it. I think it's because Jerry Seinfeld to me wasn't a very good actor, isn't a very good actor.
Yeah.
So it was hard to watch him.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, when you watch Curb, you see that it was clearly Larry David that was the brilliance of the show.
Yeah.
And so there's just, you know, the ensemble, the cast, you know, Jason Alexander, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, even Michael Richards are all good actors, but
right.
Jerry wasn't. They carried him. They carried him.
Yeah, you know? They did.
And I just would think that someone who's playing themselves would be better at it. You know, like if I got to play myself on a show or a movie, like, are you shitting me?
You'd just be yourself.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't get it seems like he was always forcing something, you know?
Yeah.
Which is probably, I think it lends itself to what he does comedically. He's always been very vanilla
and dry.
Yeah. But he was, you know, he was getting famous at a time where if you were clean, you made a lot of money. Like, the dream was the sitcom. That's what you were. Your whole career, especially if you were in New York at that time, revolved around your 5-minute sets. your 5 minute Tonight Show set, your 5 minute whatever set. Then you're, you know, you shot a pilot for a sitcom. You end up being a sitcom dad. You had it made, you know, or whatever. So that's what everything was designed around. Well, sitcoms had to be clean. You were on network TV. So right. Everything was designed around you getting on network TV.
Yeah.
So you're not really being yourself in that situation. You're being what the network wants you to be.
Yeah.
So therein lies the problem of playing yourself, because you're not really playing yourself. You're playing the version of yourself that the network likes.
I think that came true. Like, I remember the first time I saw Bob Saget do stand up after Full House.
Yeah.
And realized
how filthy he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're like, DJ's dad shouldn't say stuff like that.
I remember people telling me when I first started in comedy and stuff, people telling me how dirty Bob Saget was. It was just like a well-known fact in the comedy community. It's funny, all those things you learn about early on that you think you're cool for learning. Like, ooh, mm-hmm. I'm like in there now. You know, I know inside information. People are taking me seriously. It's fucking funny. I thought my son will say some stuff, you know, about wrestling, like some terminology or something, that it just reminds me of being that age and being in comedy and being like,
oh, I was getting heat. Oh. And then this,
yeah. Yeah. Just, you know,
drop the
belt, a prop, you know, like, what? I never heard that before. You know, he said that kind of stuff. Like, I remember people talking about Robin Williams being a thief and just a whole bunch of different, you know.
Yeah.
There's just all these little things you just heard about, you know. Apparently David Spade has a huge dick. Like, makes sense. I mean, he's always dating tens.
Right.
He's a little tiny man.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's just different. I mean, you just learn stuff. You just hear stuff. And a lot of it ends up being true, you know. Like all that Louis C.K. stuff, that was the Bill Cosby stuff. That was, I mean, everything happened with Bill Cosby because of Hannibal Buress talking about him on stage.
Yeah.
And, like, and then, that was something people just.
Just knew about him.
Just knew about him in the entertainment world. You know, I mean, I had heard stuff about Louis C.K. I heard things, you know, but
yeah. So you sent me a text with some images. We can dive into that. I also have a. We'll hit on this probably at the end, but somebody posted something on the Norwalk Facebook page, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on it as well.
Yeah, so. Let's start there. That'd be great, because before you tell me, can I just tell you my opinion on the Norwalk page in general, or the the Waukee page, or the
town Facebook page?
Yes.
Insert community name Facebook page.
Yes. And whoever decided to build that page in the first place, who was the moderator of that page, all of those things matter. And I hate these fucking pages. You see the same people on them all the time. It's
right.
It kind of reminds you of it's like they're all web sleuths.
Yeah.
Cause they're obviously fucking losers with nothing better to do.
Right.
And I'm saying, like, the frequenters of the page. We frequent social media way too much, but the frequenters of these pages, the people who argue back and forth on these pages.
Yep.
They're like web sleuths, because even though they're losers with way too much time on their hands, they feel like they're doing something useful.
Yes.
So there's no stopping them because they're righteous.
Yes, I agree. There's a guy on this page, and I swear to God that all he does is he hijacks almost every post and somehow turns it around about how the Norwalk City government stifles free speech, and this is America, and they and the moderators of this page stifle my posts and whatever. And I'm not kidding you. Not kidding you, Bill.
Tinfoil hat guy.
Some person posted the other day about their kids selling lemonade or something. I don't know.
A lemonade stand.
And this dude chimed in about, oh, this is great. I'd be happy to give you $20. And then he somehow turned it into himself. And I just couldn't help myself. I commented and I was like, I got to hand it to you, man. There's no way I thought that you would be able to turn this post into you on you. But man, bravo, you were able to do it. Like, that's all you do on this post.
He makes everything about him on the Norwalk page. He makes
everything about him on the Norwalk Facebook page. So,
okay. So now tell me about it.
All right. So I'm gonna show it. Our producer, Chris, back there, I'm going to share my screen here and you can pop this up for us. So I'm curious, this business posted this sign on their window today. It says, unfortunately, due to the lack of staff and people in general not desiring to work, Mahalo's Norwalk will be closed until further notice. We will be open when we can. Our apologies. You read that. What is your first thought?
My first thought is, can we put that back up, actually?
Yep. Yep. You bet. Sorry about that.
No, I want to go through it line by line.
Yep. One second. I'll bring it back up here.
So,
Chris, can you just pass that back up? Thanks, man.
Okay, is this the post off to the right? Is this the guy off to the right?
Yeah, and the guy to the right just says, new signage at Mahalo's.
This is the guy, Justice Harris?
Yeah, he's the one that posted it.
Okay. Is that him that took the picture?
I'm assuming so.
Okay, so he's okay. So Mahalo's customers, unfortunately, due to a lack of day staff. Okay, so mistake number one is going on after that.
Yes,
unfortunately, due to a lack of day staff, period. Mahalo's Norwalk will be closed until further notice.
Yes,
that's all that needs to be said.
Correct,
we will open when we can. Our apologies. As soon as they put the "and" in there.
Yes, that's.
They are blaming everyone but themselves for their lack of staff.
Correct.
Now, this is a topic I think that is very layered. Because it's not that I don't think that it's people not desiring to work. I don't think that's the reason these restaurants are having trouble staffing.
Correct. I agree.
I don't think it's the lack of desire to work as much as it is the lack of desire to give up your time that you could be spending doing things you like. For money, just right. In general, I don't think it's as much about, like, everybody goes right at not paying enough.
Right.
I don't feel like that's necessarily true because people have to work. I mean, people have to have money. You can't even survive.
Right.
So people are obviously getting money somehow.
Correct.
So, like, how is everyone getting money when they're talking about people not wanting? So I think that we have a huge uptick in people that would label themselves as digital creators.
Right.
Where people are just creating different things online that they're able to sell, and they can make a few $100 a week doing that.
Yep.
And then spend the rest of their time doing what they want, like raising their kids, whatever else. People are maybe not needing that part-time job as much anymore to, mm-hmm. you know, raise their children, things like that. So they just, that few hundred dollars that they're going to get a week by bussing tables or whatever.
Yeah.
They can get doing something else and spending a lot less time doing it.
I agree. My thought when I read that was, you posted that on your front page. You're basically, I don't know that I would want to go in and apply for a job there. Somebody right. that is so quick to throw a huge swath of people under the bus with some kind of general.
Right.
I mean, maybe people are just sick of working for terrible people that don't treat them properly.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe they're not being trained well enough and they're struggling. And then the customers who are paying an $8 for a coffee feel like they have the right to berate you when you're sitting there making $9 an hour. And
right.
maybe they just don't want to take it. I saw that your friend, and he's pretty prominent here in Norwalk, Dante Powell, commented on this.
Yeah, yeah. I bet we have kind of the same type of...
You actually do. Dante's comment was, this makes me not support them. People have an innate desire to work, which is exactly what you say, and support themselves and the loved ones. A sign offering a clear-cut job offer and benefits would probably net them enough interest to fill the employee gap if the particulars are attractive enough. My guess, however, is that either the pay and hours aren't enough to make a decent living, or there's a culture within the company that makes it so people are unwilling to stay there. Either way, I'll be asking my family to hold off supporting until we see signs of a more reasonable company structure that operates in a way that we are happy to support and give our business to.
Yeah, Dante said it perfectly.
Yeah, he did.
That's pretty much right where I'm at on it. I mean, look at my friend Gwen, for example. Gwen Page owns Whatcha Smokin' Barbecue.
Yeah.
In Luther.
Oh, up in Luther. Yeah. Love that place.
And look where it is. Look how far away it is.
Yeah.
From here.
Mm-hmm.
She has zero problem staffing. Zero. Right. She has people knocking on the door to work there.
Correct.
And it's because of who she is.
Right.
It's because of the way she treats the people that work for her. It's because she pays well.
Yep.
You know, she was, you know, part owner of Fong's for the longest time. I mean, Fong's was her baby.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, she was in business with a lot of the Full Court Press people, and they did, you know, Fong's. They built Fong's. And, you know, they had a falling out. Basically, it was all going on during COVID and, well, during pandemic and after. So she ended up out selling her shares, whatever, and bought Whatcha Smokin'. And now she just hired a new GM, and the person in charge of her catering. Guess where they came from?
Yeah.
They worked for her at Fox.
Yeah.
She's just, and believe me, I've been friends with her for 20 plus years, and I delivered pizzas for Fong's during the pandemic.
I remember that.
Yeah, and she paid me better than any other pizza joint would have paid me in the world to deliver pizzas, and it was, you know, was great. She was helping mm-hmm. me make ends meet. It was a mutually beneficial relationship for sure.
Right.
But you know, but that's just who she is. I mean, and, you know, and she's not the only person in the world like that. I mean, there's, you know, she had the place at the fair, and then you look at like Brooks Reynolds, who has JR's Pork Ranch at the fair. They have no problem staffing.
Right.
They have no problems. People chomping at the bit to work
for. Yep.
because they pay well, they make good money while they're there. Everybody's happy. Everybody's cool.
Listen, the other coffee shops in town don't seem to have a staffing problem.
Right.
Scooters is got cars lined up and people and there's always people in there working. The little mobile coffee shop that grounds around town is what it's called, is a little coffee truck.
Uh-huh.
They're open every day. They don't seem to have any problem with staffing. So it's not that people don't want to work. So,
well, and I think mental health is becoming a bigger and bigger factor for people with their jobs.
And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this.
I think that probably, I mean, I don't want to judge without knowing anyone involved.
Right.
But the tone of their sign kind of, you know, makes me make some assumptions.
Doesn't give a great first impression.
No. And, you know, maybe that's unfair. I've put my foot in my mouth before, but
I don't think that's unfair. When you put a sign up like that, that
people
in there
in general don't want to work. Right. I mean, that's such bullshit.
Then you are, to me, you're open to whatever criticism that comes your way.
So I like when Dante said something about people not staying or whatever, I think that probably people that may have worked there felt like their mental health was compromised probably by whoever was in charge of them. I mean,
right. Yeah.
The number one reason people quit jobs is because of their immediate supervisor.
Right.
Not anybody beyond that.
That's correct.
So if it's a small business, ownership is quite possibly the supervisor. And if they have that rule with an iron fist attitude because they own the joint, and it's hard not to.
Right.
Because people are literally stealing from you in front of your face when they're not doing their job.
Yep.
And when you take it personally like that, you know.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's hard. It's hard to employ people. That's why guys want to get so far up to the top that people underneath them take care of the dirty work.
Right.
But so I think that's another factor in why people are having trouble staffing, you know, restaurants and different things, because serving is a stressful job. It's very, you know, if you're making good money serving, you're busy.
Yep.
So when you're busy, it's very fast paced. It's very unforgiving. It's the service industry is very hard, and people think it's not because they don't think it takes any skills.
Right.
They think it's a, I don't know how you, unskilled labor.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, you know, people think that with warehouse workers, forklift drivers, landscapers.
Yes.
This is all unskilled labor that doesn't deserve to make more than me who went to school.
Right.
Well, everybody deserves to make whatever amount of money they can make a living with for what they do. We don't need to scale it out like that. The more educated people are still not going to make as much money as an uneducated person that took a risk and won.
Right.
The people fail to understand, no matter what your education level is, you don't get rich working for somebody else. You get rich through risk reward.
Right.
And yes, you'll have a higher paying job most of the time if you have a college education. But that's having a higher paying job working for the man still. But you don't get rich working for the man. It just doesn't happen.
Right. The unskilled labor, that always drives me crazy, because let's take the example of working at a McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to work there. They don't make money. I guarantee you, they might work physically. They work a lot harder than I do every day at my job, sitting at my desk.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a guy during lunch rush that's cooking Adam McDonald's is moving his ass
and on his feet all day and having to keep track of all those orders and it all the time. All you got to do is on undercover watch some of these executives go into their own restaurants and try to perform the duties that pay these people, you know, fraction of a money that you get. And they can't do it. And we're going to go off a tangent here, but look at those workers. You know, I saw the interview with the president of GM or something. Some lady, she makes $36 million, and she's fighting these people to get a 40% pay raise. I mean,
yeah,
but no way she could go in that job. There's no way.
Well, and she'll say things like, this isn't financially feasible or something. And then you look,
you look at
like their net profit for the last year or something. And it's in the billions, you know, and it's just like, come the fuck on. And that's what it is. The people at the top aren't willing. They are the last ones that are going to change their lifestyle.
Right.
We're the ones that make cuts when things aren't so good, you know?
Right.
I'm not making as much money this year as I was last year. Therefore, I'm going to cut out a couple of these online subscriptions that I have.
Right.
I'm going to add, you know, $50 a month to my budget because I'm making 50 less bucks a month.
Right.
These people are like, dude, I'm not going to make $3 billion less this year than I made last year. I made $10 billion last year. I'm not okay. If I'm only making $7 billion this year, we need to start paying some people less money. We need to fire some people.
Right. We need to lay some
so that I make $10 billion again.
Because our profits aren't as high.
Yeah. And it's just like, at some point, one would think there'd be some type of revolution.
I'm not hinting at that, but that's kind of what I think this is since 2020 and the pandemic, I think obviously the pandemic and then the killing of George Floyd, I think woke a lot of people up to what the value of your life is, as opposed to working your ass off every day for what?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot there's a ton of these executive type people out here that think that people working from home is the most terrible thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by those people going home and working in their homes and spending time with their kids and see a path that I think shows how important those other things are other than working every day 8 to 5 for what? My dad worked 8 to 5, 8 to 7, 7 to 7, construction or whatever, never had two dimes to rub together, hardly at all, and died in a trailer from a stroke in the middle of his hallway. What other than his family, what did he ever make of that?
I think the pandemic woke people up to the pursuit of happiness again.
Yes.
I think that what happened, you know, that was a big argument throughout my last marriage, was the fact that I didn't just give up on comedy.
Right.
And work full time and, you know, because that's just what, you know, when I'd have a couple of bad months, it was like, well, why aren't you doing something else? Well, you know, we've had that talk, you know, I've explained how that works.
Yep.
You know, and I think when the pandemic hit, a lot more people were going, wow, I should have tried that thing.
Yeah.
I should have went ahead and gave that thing all my effort. And, you know, here I am laid off. You know, getting unemployment and it's really not near enough, but I'm making it work.
Right.
But look at all this time I have and how much happier I am.
Right.
even though I got this much less money.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are just kind of figuring out. And like, that was me. That was my attitude from the time, from my early 20s when I started doing stand up. I was like, this makes me happy. This is what I'm going to do. I don't care how much money I make. I'm going to make that work. I'm going to make whatever I make work.
Right. You said something earlier about a supervisor, your direct supervisor is
right.
Typically the reason why most people leave their job. When I was in 2021, I was working at BH, which is the seventh largest property management company in the country. I loved that job. Loved working with the people I worked with. My boss was amazing. She was a great mentor. We were really good friends. And they let her go. And within 6 months of having the direct supervisor I had was great, but most of my work came from somebody that I did not get along with. Her and I did not see eye to eye. And she knew I was an ally of Kelly's and wanted me gone and made my life miserable. And within 6 months, I was miserable there.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months earlier, I probably would have said I'd work there until I retired because I loved that company so much. And I mean, hell, I loved it so much, Bill, that when I went through chemo and radiation, I never missed a day of work because I felt I owed it to them because they were so supportive of me.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, I was pretty much ousted out of the door by that lady.
Yeah.
And I feel, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. But that was a good lesson, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because he's coming no matter what. And that's what I tell everybody all the time, you know?
Yes.
And that's another thing that's changing attitude wise. You know, it was always rewarded. This guy comes to work sick.
Right.
This guy, he always stays late. You know, this guy.
Yeah.
And that's going away. And now people are understanding it doesn't matter how much I fucking kill myself for this company when it benefits them, as soon as it benefits them financially, they will get rid of me like that.
Correct.
And if I die tomorrow, they will replace me like that.
Yep. And I
like, so I'm going to take my breaks. I'm not going to stay late. I am going to fucking take every ounce of PTO that I have. All of it.
100%. 100%. It's owed to me and I'm taking it. It's my time.
Yeah.
And you need to find a lot of people are finding a cultural fit. That's what they're looking for. Is
exactly. People are looking more for culture than they are money.
That's right. Correct. Mm-hmm. But Stacy told me when I got laid off in January, Stacy told me, she goes, listen, I know you've been unhappy for the last few years and I make a good living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay if you find something that's not as much money, but if you're happy every day and you come home and you're a better husband and father because you're not so depressed all the time.
Yeah.
We'll make it work. You know what I mean? We'll make it work. And
I wish my ex-wife would have came to me that way.
Right. I would tell you, my first wife wouldn't have done that.
Right.
My first wife wouldn't have done that. And I've said 100 times that Stacy is amazingly supportive.
Right.
Even with the stuff that I do down here. Right. She's totally on board with it.
Right.
But that culture fit. And when I worked at the last job that I was at, that I got laid off of, Bill, it was one of those days where it was one of those deals where within a few months, I knew I made a mistake.
Yeah.
I was marginalized. You hired me for a reason because I'm smart and I'm capable. And every single thing I bring to you, you tell me it's not good enough. So then I would acquiesce and go, okay, well, I'll do it your way. And where did that get me? Right out the door.
Yeah.
And I swore up and down when I left that job and I was looking for a new job. I told Stacy, I said, I will not compromise again what I think is right. If I go into a job and I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it the way I think it's right. And then if I don't perform or if I get fired or whatever, then at least I can walk out the door and go, I did it the way I should have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll be damned if I'm going to let somebody else tell me that I wasn't good enough, especially when you wouldn't take a damn idea of mine.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We need to take a break. We're 45 minutes in, but this is a really good conversation. I want to keep it up. So,
yeah. And go remind me the work from home thing. We need to
Yeah, we need to circle back on that. So, but I want to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Revelton Distilling Company, Osceola, Iowa. Their tasting room is amazing. They're getting into fall, so they have a lot of activities on Saturdays. Check out their calendar on their website. And I know their bourbon is going to be launched sometime in December, so I'm super excited for that. But let's take a break and get a word from our sponsor.
At Revelton Distilling Company, everyone has become a part of the Revelton family. From the Taylors and their daughter who helped perfect their award-winning gins, to the team who installed Lucy, our 33-foot-tall custom-made still, right down to the local farms that provide our coveted corn, and even the cows on those farms who consume our mash byproduct. Want to see the farm to flask come to life? Now you can tour Lucy and find out where we take Iowa's harvest and transform it into our finest spirits. Choose between a 45-minute tour or find out even more by scheduling a VIP behind-the-scenes tour to get the taste of the full Revelton experience. You can visit them at 1400 West Clay Street in Osceola, Iowa, or find all of Revelton's award-winning spirits at any local grocery or spirits retailer.
And we're back. Thank you very much for that. Before the break, we were talking about work from home. We wanted to touch base on that.
Yeah.
And we were talking about jobs, job situations. And I will jump in real quick here because I bet we have a different view of mental health and working from home. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, it's like you said that, like, there's these more executives more and more talking about how it's this evil thing, which I think is 100% crock. I think that when it, as far as number one in the current economy, everybody knows the economy's shitty right now, right?
Yep.
So I think one of the bigger reasons that the CEOs and stuff are thinking this way is because they don't want to have all these buildings they're paying for no reason.
Yeah.
But look at if you only need to, if you can just work home from home twice a week, so you only got to go to the office 3 days. Okay. Just look how much gas you're saving by not having to drive back and forth to work. Let's say you work 15, 20 minutes away.
Yep.
Like, that's almost a tank of gas for some people. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So just that right there. And it doesn't change your pay scale. So like, that's a bonus. That saves you money. That ultimately makes you more money by working at that place, right?
Right.
Also, for me, it's like, for me personally, if I have a day job at all, I don't like it. I don't want one. I only want to be telling jokes. I don't want to have a day job. If I'm forced to have a day job to pay my mortgage and all this and that,
right?
The biggest thing about day jobs for me is just the having to get up and go to them. Like, I don't want to be obligated at all, ever. I want to do what I want. I want to do things when I feel like it. Right. Sure. And so a lot of people are, you know, well, that's adult. Welcome to being an adult. Well, fuck off. I'm an adult. I am an adult and I can decide what I do with my time and my money. So eat a fucking dick because you had to give yourself an excuse for giving up. But the point is, it's 100% better for my mental health if I can work from home a couple of days a week and don't have to go to the office.
Right.
I would prefer to work from home 5 days just completely, but I don't think that would be good for my mental health in the long run. I think the hybrid model would be the best for my mental health personally, because I feel like if I never left the house, I would literally never leave the house.
Right.
Like, I would only leave the house for social things. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy either.
Right.
Because then you find yourself, you only leave the house to drink and do, you know what I mean? Like,
you're not,
you end up not even shopping. you know, you end up getting everything off of Amazon. You just, I don't know. I think it'd be easy to almost become agoraphobic. But I still would rather, if it was one way or the other, if it was 100% work from home or 100% in office or on site, whatever, I'm going 100% from home if I got to choose.
Yep. Jeremy says, and this is kind of where I was going, it wasn't good for my mental health being at home 5 days a week. That's where I'm at with it. I've worked exclusively from home since 2020.
Yeah.
At the end of my time at BH, I begged my boss at the time to let me go back into the office. I was vaccinated. There was hardly anybody in there. But it just gave me some place to go because I was in this house every day. And frankly, I would get lonely. You know, my wife worked every day, the kids were gone. And then, you know, the other job that I went to, was exclusively from home. That, I mean, learning a brand new job from home, that was extremely hard. Cause you know,
I mean, by looking over your shoulder to help you.
Right. I mean, if there's a question, I could swivel my call, my, you know, hey, Lisa, do you understand this? Now I got to get on a Teams call, share my screen.
Yeah.
It was taxing a lot. And there were times where I would come upstairs and I'd be so exhausted because I was so isolated and alone. And there were a couple of times that I would, you know, Stacy would yell down the stairs for me to do something. And I finally went upstairs. I said, you know, you could just walk downstairs. Like, even if you just walked downstairs at some point and said, what are you working on? You know, and we have a 5-minute conversation. So for me, the hybrid model was so much better. I would like to be able, if I get up in the morning and I'm like, you know what, I've got a lot of work that I don't want to be interrupted. I'll go downstairs and I'll work for the day. But there's other days where I miss sitting in my office and having a conversation about last night's TV show or, you know, let's go grab lunch and, you know, and talk about, you know, whatever, sports or whatever. I mean, that was something that I look forward to, and it's really hard to work from home for me, but that's how I am. Just like you, you don't want to work during the daytime. That's how you are. There's no cookie cutter way to do it. And for these people to sit here and say their productivity and they need to be in the office and so on and so on. Listen, some of these people that have just come out of they have just gotten into the job market don't know any other way.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at somebody that maybe is a college graduate or somebody that's fresh out of high school that took a desk job somewhere and they've been working from home since 2020. And now you're going to tell, and they've been doing their job properly all this time. And now you're going to tell them, well, you don't do your job good enough. You got to go into the office. Mm-hmm. That I hear all the time from people that are Caitlin's age, for example, that are like, why should I have to go into the office? I can do every single thing that I need to.
Right. It doesn't matter.
I mean, I would go into this last job that I have. We worked in a hybrid setting and I would go sit in there and I would be at my cube and I'm 52 years old. I need my two monitors. I need my keyboard.
Yeah.
The 23-year-olds are sitting over there in the lounge area. They got their laptop on their lap. They got a blanket on and they're lounging in this couch working away and they're doing their job fine.
Yeah.
But they're in the office and then they'll be like, hey, why don't you come over and join us? Well, because I'm 320 pounds and I can't sit on a couch and put the laptop on my knees and just chill out. I don't have the body style.
Yeah.
But it's just a completely different generation. You know, what are you seriously going to make those guys come in there and sit in a cubicle and have their four walls? And that's not going to work. And if you force those guys in there, you think the narrative now is nobody wants to work. No, nobody wants to work for your rigid, toxic environment.
My sister shared like a cartoon that was great. It was a guy like looked like an obvious, like an executive or something. And he's holding like his coffee. And he's in his big, his office that's above everything. He's looking out this window at like the factory. It's like, he's like, nobody wants to work for 999 times less than what I make anymore.
That's exactly right. The greatest scene ever is in Office Space when they interview that guy and he goes, He's like, why don't you just walk us through your typical day? And he's like, well, I usually come in the side door so Lumbar doesn't see me come in. And then I sit down and I turn my computer on and I probably veg out for an hour or so. And then I go get lunch. I maybe work a good 20 minutes every day. And I was like, yeah, I've done that. Like, you know, I've done that before at jobs. Like, I get it.
Definitely. And then you end up trying, like, you're afraid they're going to find out.
Right. Yeah.
Point, you know, and that's my thing. Like, don't take away the things that make a place a good place to work. That's just gonna
right.
And then, you know, if you're letting people work from home, don't take it away.
That's right.
You know, make it an option, but you do this and then you take it away. You're taking away what made it a good place.
And you're gonna find that those people are going to immediately start looking.
Yeah. And especially if it's a job that there's just lateral movement.
Yes.
All over the place, you know. And that's what you're dealing with most employees, especially most that are working from home all the time. I mean, most of those, that level of employee can just move laterally throughout that same business forever.
Yep.
Like as simple as like a forklift driver, you know, let's say forklift driver makes, you know, $18 an hour somewhere, right?
Right.
Chances are they're going to be able to go to another warehouse that'll pay them 19.
Yep.
And so they'll go there for that dollar.
Right.
And then the place that they were at before now has to hire a new guy, but they got to hire them at $19.50.
Right.
Or they'll hire them again, another one at $18, and then they'll leave. But it's just going to be this kind of lateral same. So what do you do in order to keep those people? You make it and you do the shit like let them bring their dog to work and stupid shit like that. Like that's the kind of shit that you do. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay more.
You pay more when you have to retrain somebody all the time.
Yeah. So either
you got to replace that job. You're paying HR people to do all that stuff. You're taking somebody else that is doing their job that has to take time out of that to train this person for the next X number of days, whatever else.
It's either pay more.
Right.
Or let them bring their dog.
Guess what? Yeah. You know. Guess what, Mahalos? They're building a Starbucks right next door to you. I'm going to guess the people that don't work at Mahalos anymore can get a job for $13 an hour at Starbucks.
Yeah.
So, and they'll probably be properly trained and supported. Jeremy says, it's not that I'm lazy. I just don't care. Peter Gibbons from Office. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You know, I sat down and watched that movie with my wife and 10 minutes in and she's like, I don't get it. And I was like,
really?
Because you've never worked in an office in your entire life. You've worked in a school and taught. I'm telling you, every single thing in this thing is real.
You don't even have to, though. Like, I never worked in an office when I saw that movie, and I got every bit of it because it made fun of everything I've always made fun of why I didn't want a fucking job. Like, everything in that movie was exactly why.
I know. It's so great.
You fucking spend your whole life trying to get out of kindergarten just to get treated like you're in kindergarten again.
Yes.
Oh, that's all it fucking is.
Let me tell you, I worked it and three of my best friends still work there. We all worked in a call center. I won't name the company. We worked in a call center for IT.
Perfect.
And we would, you'd have to punch in a code to go to the bathroom and you'd have to punch in a code to wrap up your ticket or whatever. And the worst job there, the best and worst job at the same time, every once in a while you'd be able to be off the phone, but your job was to roam the rows and somebody else on a headset was at a computer and was looking at everybody's queue. And let's say Joel was in wrap up for 3 minutes after a call.
Yeah.
This person would then turn and go, hey, Chris, Joel's in wrap up for 3 minutes. Why don't you go check and see if he needs some help? So I would have to walk over to Joel and go, hey, Joel, are you about done wrapping up that ticket? Because you got to get back in the queue. Now, what do you think their reaction was to me?
Fuck you.
Hey, I'm fucking wrapping up my ticket. Right. Like this, you know, I'll get in, you know, I'm not their boss.
And that's it. When they say, why don't you go see if they need help? What they're really saying is see why they're fucking off over there.
See why they're in wrap up for 3 minutes.
Yeah, they're fucking off.
So then But it was a great job because you were off the phones. You didn't have to take calls, right?
So yeah, but you're a fucking hall monitor.
But I was a hall monitor. Exactly.
Yeah. School. It's all fucking, it's still
and I remember, school. And Joel knows he's laughing. I remember one time I got called into my boss's office because I had taken personal time in the queue for 25 minutes. And I said, I was going to the bathroom.
Taking a shit. Yeah.
And he's like, well, I said, do you really want the details? Like, I'm a grown ass man. Yeah. I had to use the bathroom. I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
I mean.
I was pissing out of my ass.
Right.
For 25 minutes and I didn't go home. I stayed here to fucking work for you piece of shit people. That want to fucking account for every minute that I spend. I fucking can't stand it.
And it's how they treat you. Like, and the problem is people respond to it. It works. Yeah. The reason they do it is because it works.
Yes.
Like you were just talking about all these calls you had to take, right? I guarantee the incentives, and people joke about, I see people joke about it on Facebook all the time. It's the same. It's the same shit. Hey, if everybody makes their 50 calls by Friday, we'll have a pizza party.
Let me tell you,
we'll eat lunch outside, and you can wear jeans. Yes. And everybody's like, "Hey, let's go! I want to wear jeans Friday." Fuck you, man! Fuck off,
Bill. I will tell this story because it's absolute. And I preface this by saying my three best friends, they still work for that company. A couple of them still work for that department. One of them is a manager. I wish he would have been my manager because he was awesome. And we can joke about it now. But they used to have what they'd call patch Thursdays. So every Thursday, every third Thursday of the month, Microsoft would kick out a security patch. It would install on these machines automatically, and they would automatically reboot. Every single computer in the company had what they call this encryption software, this PointSec encryption software, that it was the first thing that would pop up, and you'd have to put in a password. 95% of the company would never, the people would never reboot their machine. So you would only see that password when this system would reboot. Mm-hmm. So you might go a whole month without having to log in. What do you think would happen? People don't fucking remember their password.
Right.
So you'd have to go through this whole spiel of you'd have to have them tab over to this button and click on this thing, and they would read you a code, and you would type the code in, and then you would read them a code, and then they would type the code in, and then they'd be able to reset their password. They couldn't remember their password, but every single one of them would remember the sequence of what they'd have to do to get it rebooted. So I used to work 6 to 2:30. By 7 o'clock, the board would be lit up in red because there'd be like 185 calls in queue already. And there's 600 agents on the floor. So there's already 600 calls going on. There's still 185, and you can just see the number building up. And notoriously, this is what they would say. Hey, we need everybody to work through their lunch, but we're going to provide pizza for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you know what?
So you can eat at your desk.
You know what would be great? Is if they didn't put mobile encryption software on PCs that weren't fucking mobile. That would be a game changer.
Right.
Like,
so. Yeah, but then isn't that your job security?
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know? Everything's such a double-edged sword. My whole thing is always just like, the shit that they do is just so insulting sometimes. Like, I remember being in charge of people, and they're like, if they build this many pallets, then we'll get them pizza on Friday. And I'm like, don't do that. I'm like, it's insulting. You're treating them like fucking children.
It is insulting.
I go, if you want to incentivize them with things that are useful to them.
Right.
Give them a $100 gift card to Hy-Vee.
Yeah.
So they can have fucking free groceries that week. Right. They don't have to spend $100 out of their paycheck.
Yes.
On their groceries. Right. Like, do some shit like that. Don't offer them a fucking quarter, an hour more. if they reach this fucking plateau.
Right.
Like, do shit that's useful to incentivize them. Don't treat them like they're in fucking kindergarten.
Right.
And they just continue. And the reason why is because in the long run, it's cheaper to buy pizza for 300 people once.
Right.
Than it is to pay them all a quarter more multiple times.
Right.
Because if you incentivize them monetarily, they're going to reach the goal.
Right.
You incentivize them with pizza, they're going to say, fuck off, I had pizza at home last night.
Right.
Like, it's not a thing anymore.
It's not.
I mean, just look at it when we were kids. If you ordered pizza, if our parents ordered pizza when we were kids, that was a fucking delicacy.
Right.
And then we got to where we ordered pizza all the fucking time.
Right. Yeah.
And it was no big deal. Right. And now half of our kids don't even give a fuck about pizza.
Right.
Because we ordered pizza like a motherfucker when they were growing up.
Yeah.
Now they all want sushi. And we're like, sushi's for rich cunts. How the fuck are you eating sushi? Because that's what it was when we were kids. I mean, fuck.
I agree.
Look at Breakfast Club. The fucking Molly Ringwald busts out sushi. And everybody's like, oh, that's the rich cunt of the group.
Never seen that movie. I've not seen Breakfast Club.
You've never seen Breakfast Club.
No, I haven't. I'm sorry.
Can we just wrap it up? It's fucking unbelievable.
Yes, that's a good. That's probably a good ending.
No, I'm just joking. Because we didn't even get to the stuff I wanted to talk about.
I know.
We won't go on forever, but I do want to address at least briefly.
Yeah.
If we can.
Yep, we can. Let me bring it up. You want me to show it on the screen? Because I don't have it on the screen. I have it on my phone.
Oh, I thought that's why I sent it to you early so that you could get prepared to put it on the screen before.
Why would I do that?
Yeah, that, I mean, that would fucking make sense. Now I see why they ran you out of that fucking job.
Give me a sec.
They probably fucking told you about something an hour before and you were like, wow.
Why am I going to do that? That's
fucking IT guy. He was working in the IT department. Wonders why he got fired and he doesn't even fucking have the sense to get the pictures.
That guy's that fired. He doesn't even get pizza before he leaves.
Oh, you definitely.
All right, which one do you want to do? Self-sabotage or the t-shirt?
Do the other one first and then we'll do the shirt.
Okay. All right. I'm going to share my screen here.
Because self-sabotage is, I feel like, something I've done over the years quite a bit.
Okay.
Which got I it. Believe.
So this is a tweet that you speak.
Yeah. Like, you know, when you, like, self-sabotage is something you always think of as, you know, something that you've done where things are going well, but you expect them to ultimately go bad. So you kind of do this self-fulfilling prophecy where you start, you know, if you're a drug addict, for example, you have sobriety for so long, things are going well, but then you sabotage it because, you know, the success of it all is too scary.
Right.
Or something. And so I just thought this was interesting because it does, you know, kind of show another angle, because it is also the not asking for help, you know. Yep. A lot of people, you get caught in that toxic environment of wanting to put that toughness, you know, in front of everything else. And, you know, the rejecting of praise is something that I feel like we've talked about before, where our, like, that Midwestern humbleness sometimes works against us.
Yep.
You know, because we feel like we're being a braggart if somebody tells us we're good at something. Oh, you know, I think it's okay. It's like we got to this place where you aren't allowed to be proud of yourself out loud.
Yeah.
Like that's something you're supposed to keep to yourself.
Right. Yeah. You know, yeah. My dad used to tell me that I would brag too much, or you need to be humble.
Yeah.
And things like that. Yeah.
And now it's not that some people don't, I need to be humbled. There are people out there that need humbled.
Sure.
But it's not the same thing. I think people right. just, I think people conflate two things that aren't, you know,
yeah.
There's definitely people that I think way too highly of themselves and need humbled a bit, but
right.
there's others that I think are, it's, you know, like, I think, right. Like Deion Sanders is a great example right now. I think that people don't like how proud of a man he is out loud, right out there in front of you. They right. don't like it. They want him to get brought down to earth so badly. Because they think that he seeks this attention. And what they don't understand is this isn't people like Deion Sanders do not have to seek attention. They get attention just by being who they are. It's 100% organic. Deion Sanders commands attention. He doesn't seek it. He's right. not trying to get clicks. Everybody else is trying to get clicks off of him. He didn't do shit for clicks. Deion doesn't give a fuck about any clicks. It's everybody else that's putting him out there that gives a fuck about the clicks.
Right.
And why is he getting clicks? Because he draws attention. But I don't think he walks around looking for it. I think it just happens. He's just an attention-drawing personality. And people like him. So, like I said, well, I just think that people don't like to be proud out loud. I think they're afraid.
Looking at this list, I would probably check off four of these things on this list.
Mm-hmm.
Isolating yourself when hurt. Mm-hmm. I've done that. Like if I'm upset or if I am a little sad or whatever, I just go quiet and just want to I want to feel sorry for myself. So I think is that saying yes to everything is probably another one. Fine. You know, that's whatever you want to do. Let's just do that. That's fine with me. Yes. I've done that before.
Just out of just fatigue.
I think just because I not all the time, but in times that I'm feeling sad, it's just because I don't have the energy to even discuss why I don't want to do it.
So you just do it.
So I just do it. Yeah. Which adds into putting your needs on hold.
Yeah.
There are a lot of times that I've said, I've put the kids or my wife's needs above mine, just because I feel like as a man, that's what I'm supposed to do.
And I think there's a healthy amount of that you are supposed to do, but I think it gets screwed up.
Yeah.
But see, if you look right here, these kind of contradict each other. Like isolating yourself when hurt and then saying yes to everything contradicts each other.
Right. Like, well, I think they're different times, you know, though. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, yeah.
But yeah, I see what you're saying.
In the right circumstance, they contradict each other, you know?
Right.
Because you're isolating yourself, but then people are like, hey, let's go do this, let's go do that. And you say yes because you don't want to disappoint them.
Right.
Well, now you're not isolating yourself. So, right.
Yeah.
You know, it can work both ways. I guess none of these are absolute.
No, and trying to be perfect is probably another one for me.
Well, procrastinating on important tasks, I think that's more of an example of self-sabotage than anything, I think, on this list, because when, like, there's a practical application for that, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're feeling down or whatever, and you're doing that curl up in a ball thing, well, you still got to pay your electric bill.
Right.
And so, in a way, you're self-sabotaging if you isolate too much and you don't get your shit done. Now you got to figure out how to get the lights on.
Right.
And now you're behind the eight ball. And now that
spirals that.
Yeah. Because unless,
you
know, the reality is most of us don't have the luxury of bouncing back financially.
Right.
If it starts rolling downhill, it's going to stay that way.
for most of us.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. Little different angle. And then this is another thing I wanted to discuss.
Go ahead and bring that back up, Chris. There you go. Thanks.
Yeah, this one here. So I've been seeing this go around Facebook a bunch. Some kind of under the guise of some kind of like mental health awareness.
Yeah.
There's this t-shirt, there's hoodies, hats, whatever. You know, we're going to celebrate, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like I don't know how to feel about this because I get the sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great, but I saw a comment when I was looking at it that really made me think. And for the most part, when these comments get made about other things, a lot of times it's an eye roll for me.
Yeah.
But this one made me think where someone said, can we please just stop using the word broken? Mm. And I was like, you know, that made me look at this, like my knee-jerk reaction when I saw this shirt was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's when you sent it to me. I thought, okay, I'm not sure why we're talking about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then I saw that comment. And like I said, most of the time a comment like that would be an eye roll because I feel like this is a thing that has come from a pure place.
Right.
And so I feel like the comment in some way kind of shits on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfair when someone has good intentions.
Right.
But at the same time, I get that comment. Like, once I read that, it made me all... I don't think I'd wear that now.
Right.
Like, initially, I was like, I would probably wear that. That's a cool shirt. That it seems supportive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what that's what made it interesting to me is it brings up that... I don't know what the right word is, but it's a double... there's a duality there where even the most well-intentioned thing can like fuck somebody up. Like,
yeah.
You know, to insinuate like you buy this shirt to support your autistic cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And your autistic cousin looks at it and goes, I thought I wasn't broken. I thought there was nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
So it's. And then there's the whole let's celebrate our brokenness. Let's. You know, so many people are talking about how they're broken or dead inside. And it's almost like a joke, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, for someone who's perfectly fine. Yes, I'm broke. And they're saying, I'm broken. I'm accepting it. Look at me. Broken crayon, still color.
Right.
I mean, where are we at that something like this can be divisive?
Well, I think it goes to what we've talked about before, though, that every single person, there's no person out there that's not suffering from something mm-hmm. when it comes to their mental health. And I think this shirt, the way you've explained it and the word broken, delegitimizes that talk because, I mean, everybody is broken in some way.
Yeah. And it's like, if something's wrong with everybody, then nothing's wrong with anybody.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. You know, when people go immediately at different things, you know, if you label everything racist, now all of a sudden nothing's racist.
Right. Yep.
You know, if you can do that across the board.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean,
So now that you've heard that comment, did that, I mean, you had the same knee-jerk reaction as me. Did that all
I did. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. That's supportive. Yeah. But then, yeah, as you've explained it, I think it doesn't, to your point, it labels people like it shouldn't be.
Yeah. And it's like, how do you take what that is trying to say and say it in a better way? And be able to have a cooler slogan, like, you know, yeah. It's a cool shirt. You know, could it say all crayons color? And then show like some broken ones and some regular ones and some fat ones and some skinny ones. And, you know, some with paper on them still, some without.
All crayons matter.
Oh, shit. No.
Sorry. We need to get out. We need to end this episode.
All crayons matter.
All crayons matter.
Listen, if that's your go-to.
Right? That's where I'm all messed up.
Then somebody else will go, no, only blue crayons matter.
That's right. What about the magentas? They're important.
No, we conquered the magentas. Those mobs, savages.
The mobs.
The magentas were a bunch of savages. We took them out of the box. Actually, what we did was we gave them their own little box.
That's right.
And we put them over here.
It was separate.
They could do it. Yeah, we told them they could do what they wanted as long as they stayed there.
That's right. The box
as long was separate. As long as they colored in the lines. We gave them lines to color in. And we said you had to color in those lines.
Stay in the lines.
Or you're out of here.
You're out of here.
Filthy, savage magentas.
We are off the rails. All right. I'm leaving for Orlando on Thursday morning. So,
are you going to Disney?
The boys have a Williams Syndrome Adventure Seekers trip. So it's for adults that have Williams Syndrome. They belong to this national group. And this is the trip that a bunch of them are taking. So they're all... They need a chaperone, so mom and I are going with them. So.
Explain Williams Syndrome a
little Williams bit. Syndrome
I
is...
I know we've talked a little bit about it, but I don't think you've ever actually...
So Williams Syndrome is a rare genetic disease. Part of their genes were underdeveloped. So you can pretty much tell a Williams Syndrome kid by their facial. You know, sometimes, you know, just like Down Syndrome kids have similar facial structures, Williams Syndrome's kids... have that as well, but they also narrowing of a heart valve, I think is what it's called. And a lot of them, that's sometimes how they're found. They find that valve and then they're tested. The boys were actually under a year and they weren't eating. They were throwing up and spitting up and weren't eating. And Stacy took them to the doctor multiple times and the doctor would say, you know, we don't see anything wrong with them. You just take them back home. I mean, there was at one point Stacy was feeding them with a little eyedropper of food because that's all they could take. And they finally took them to Mayo and they ran this, I think it's called a fish test, I think, something like that. And it came back that they had Williams Syndrome. So they have, that also goes along with, ADHD and some learning disabilities. They nickname it the cocktail syndrome because they don't meet a stranger. They will come up and talk to anybody and want to be their friend, and they're affectionate and they're loving. They don't know any boundaries when it comes to that. They're musically inclined. They're very, very musically inclined. They have issues with sound and things like that. So I'll bring up a quick photo and I'll show you what I mean when I say you can tell they have certain facial structures. So they are going to go, last year we went to a Williams Syndrome conference for the first time and they were, I'll bring up this photo here. Let's share this. That was the first time that we were around an entire group of parents and caregivers that had Williams syndrome kids.
Oh, this is probably, I bet you that's just amazing to be able to party with them.
Party with other parents. Yeah. Well, and you know what was amazing for them? So this is Josh and Jordan. So see how they have a little bit more of a facial structure. And things like that narrowing of the nose and their chin and things like that. So shout out to Hall and Nash, the insiders. Yeah. But I what was profound was, is we took them there last year, and that was the first time that we were in a public setting where we could feel like we could let them be themselves, because we knew they weren't going to be judged.
Yeah,
they were either around other people like themselves, or they were around other adults and people that understood them.
Yeah, they weren't going to make anyone uncomfortable.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There were times where we would go somewhere and Josh would be like, we'd go bowling, and Josh would constantly want to talk to the people beside him, you know, and hey, how are you? My name's Josh. Are you my friend? You know, things like that. And I would look at it and go, oh, come on, Josh, don't bother them, because I would feel bad.
Right.
But really, it's a gift. I mean, they are so loving and caring and fun. So this trip is a chance for them to go with other adults that have Williams syndrome.
Sure.
And meet other adults. So we're going to go to Orlando. We're all staying at the same hotel. They have a section of the hotel cordoned off for everybody to go hang out, you know, laugh, party, whatever. We do have tickets to Disney on one day. We're going to go to the beach another day. So they're super excited to go. So
do they did they get girlfriends and shit last year? Are they?
So Josh and Jordan both, when they were Jordan fell absolutely madly in love with somebody's sister who didn't have Williams syndrome.
Oh no.
And she was super sweet, but I could tell, he had gotten the bug.
Bug.
Yeah, anytime we were going to go somewhere where that girl was going to be, he was on it. He was ready to go. They had an ending dance. They had an ending dance that night, and all the kids were out there dancing and having fun. And Jordan was by the door waiting. And I was like, Jordan, go have fun. No, I'll be there in a second. I knew what he was doing. He was waiting for that girl.
You know, so what I mean? He intellectually knew not to tell you.
Oh yeah. No, they're smart. Like they're intellectually.
Okay. So where does that put them as far as like being able to live on their own? And
so they're 20 years old. So the last 2 years they lived at DMAC on their own in an apartment. Uh-huh. The apartment complex had adults there that if they needed anything, but from Monday through Friday, they were on their own to get up in the mornings, make their dinner. They would eat breakfast and lunch at the program that they were in. They were on their own to get to the program at DMAC. They had to walk down to class and come back. They had to do their own laundry. So they were pretty self-sufficient. Josh, even every Friday, knows he's got to fill his medicine. So he goes and fills his medicine without a reminder, does it correctly. I don't know that I could fill his medicine. There's so much of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so much better at it than I am. But I have found that since they've been home and out of school, which doesn't make him any different than Caitlin was when she came back to school.
Like out of practice.
Right. They don't do anything. Mom and dad will clean that up, you know?
Yeah.
So the challenge right now that we're having is finding them employment. Not that they can't do work. It's the challenge of finding them a place that's close by that they can get to work without mom and I having to drive so far. Cause we can't, you know, we both have jobs. So, you know, if they got a job in West Des Moines, we're not quite sure how to get them there. So that limits their job prospects, either in Norwalk or Indianola.
So they can't drive.
No, they can't drive. We did buy them electric bikes last year. They bought them actually with some of the money that they got. So they'll get on their electric bike and they'll drive down to Fairway or whatever. So, you know, if they had a job somewhere here, they could get there or whatever. But they don't drive. No.
Well, you would think Fairway would be perfect.
Neither one of them want to work at Fairway. They worked there in high school and they did not like it.
Oh, okay.
I think mostly because Jordan was constantly on his phone and taking bathroom breaks and they were busting him for it and he didn't really care for that. So
I should be able to talk on my phone whenever I want.
That's right. It was a toxic work environment, I think, is what it was.
They wouldn't let him bag groceries from home.
They wouldn't He wanted the groceries delivered.
If they bring the groceries to my house and let me bag them there, it'd be all right.
So we're heading to Orlando. So
cool.
I'll be out of town, but I'll be back on Sunday.
So. Right on. Well, you guys have a good time. Good luck. Safe travels.
I appreciate it.
We'll see you guys in a couple of weeks.
Yep. In 2 weeks, we've got, we have pods coming up the rest of the week. We have a special edition of Old Man Strength tomorrow night. We're going to have the viral sensation, the ISU hot dog guy on. Did you see this video out there, Bill?
I have seen a picture. I saw like a caption where somebody wondered what a cop was saying to him. Like,
yeah,
I
guess he was in a hot dog outfit at the Iowa State game. Well, that happens to be my daughter's friend, Caitlin, or my daughter, Caitlin, her best friend's little brother. He lives here in Norwalk. So I immediately texted his sister and said, hey, I need to get Braden on the pod in his hot dog suit. And she texted me back like 5 minutes later. She's like, he's in. Here's his number. So
that's great.
And then, of course, we have Ball Don't Lie Thursday, 3 p.m. Special guest picker. They're going to have Jordan Walker. And then Hawk's Eye View with Drew and Andrew after that. So we are out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You've wasted an hour and a half of your life. We appreciate it. Go ahead, subscribe. If you're listening, rate and review us. Give us a 5-star in honor of the Hot Mess Happy Hour. Ladies, they always say, if it's not a 5-star, keep that shit to yourself. So. All right. We are out of here. Thanks, everybody.
See you in a couple weeks. Peace.